The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drives so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping at Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid. Wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, your sports daily NFL podcast. I'm Will Benson. I'm your host. It's Wednesday, September 22nd. That can mean only one thing. It's a pew, 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 pew.
Hey, by the way, football
show. In the
your, feed. Your lasers don't sound the same.
Pew, 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 pew. No, they sound a little good. I see what you're doing there. Yeah, they sound... They sound like pieces of gravel being tossed across the parking lot.
They sound more like pew.
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 Yeah. Okay. I explained to, we got several comments about my voice on the Sunday night recap show as well as Monday show. So it actually sounds okay now compared to then.
Let's just get into it.
Okay.
You went to a wedding.
Yes.
Friday wedding or Saturday wedding?
Friday wedding.
Wow. I mean, to not be recovered by now. Well, no, that is incredible.
Well, we stayed Saturday. There's a.
Well, obviously.
Yeah.
No. I get that. I'm just saying Friday night, wedding, reception, you obviously stay over, party Saturday, and then you kind of carry on with the rest of your life. Then Sunday, as you get back to some sort of sense of normalcy. But you, my friend, are carrying this well into the week. So it's either talking about how old you're getting or you ramped it up a notch there.
I think it's probably a blend of both. Saturday was pretty big. I mean, we had a wine. There was a wine tasting. It's sort of like the final at this Charlottesville Vineyard. Really nice. I can't remember what it's called, but
they got vineyards in Charlottesville.
Yeah, I didn't know Virginia wine was a big thing, but apparently, it's okay. It's fine. It's fine. Anyway, so we did.
I'm sure that. It ranks really high on Wine Spectator, right? It's got a really high rating on that.
Yeah. Right, at least like a 78. so we went. Then we went to basically everybody who was up from Raleigh or like in town who were friends of the bride and the groom went to a bar at in the afternoon on Saturday and watched football and stayed there.
Until, of course.
Yeah, stayed there until more or less like the bar closed.
Now, so, do they have Tuffies there?
No. We didn't. I drank nothing but ranch water the entire time.
Okay. I don't know if it was ranch water, Bud Light. Wasn't sure what it was.
I love Bud Light. Yeah. But Bud Light's earlier than ranch water late.
Gotcha.
Hydrate, Brady. And then, Saturday. Well, and then the problem is Sunday is not, for many people, Sunday's a rest day.
For yours, not for truly, us. Yeah.
Not for us. Right. Exactly.
Big day.
The important thing is I made it through the podcast on Sunday night without falling asleep on camera. That's the important thing. That was a little worried about that. Anywho, Monday Night Football recap in the feed. You can also listen to the Sunday recap in the feed as well. We will have a Thursday night gambling preview coming up. But today we're going to talk to Brady Quinn, a former NFL quarterback, about what is going on with all – what's the deal with all the quarterback injuries?
I wish I could we could break down probably each one and talk about or discuss, but one thing that's becoming apparent is just the speed and the massive size and power which defenders are becoming and hitting these quarterbacks is becoming that much more punitive. But, for example, Tua Tagovailoa's hit, That hit could have been completely avoided had Jaylen Waddle, who was in the slot, who was running an option route, just had a little bit more sense of urgency. I mean, that was one of the things that always frustrated me is when wide receivers would be so keyed on running a great route that they wouldn't take into that internal clock in their head saying, it's fourth and two. I already can tell which way I'm going to break because of the way the defender's playing me. He's going to be the inside or outside leverage. So all I need to do is skip off the ball for a half second, and then I'm going to set it up, right? If he's outside, I'm going to jab at him the outside just to get him to move that way, and then I'm going to cut back across, or vice versa if he's on the inside. And instead, Waddle took his sweet-ass time, and meanwhile, Tua's back there waiting on him.
He did like a little hop, like I'm going to juke you and double move you and go crazy vertical on fourth and two. It's like, just get left, man. Get left and get open.
But it was just so slow. Like, that's okay with an option route. But just have a sense of urgency. It's only four and two. I only need you to run at most 4 yards, right? Go 2 yards past the sticks. That way, when you break, and you should be breaking either in or out, downhill, back towards the line of scrimmage, you've got a 2 yard buffer there to catch it. But instead, it took him so long to get in the route that AJ Epenesa is up on Tua, cracking him in his ribs. And now you've got Tua potentially playing through that, which, look, I've had bruised ribs, torn cartilage. It's not fun. You know, you get shot up with Novocaine, they numb it, which is great, but that only lasts for so long. And then you've got to deal with it the rest of the year, or the rest of the week when you're out there practicing. So that's that injury. I don't know how Carson Wentz sprains both ankles.
Let's stick with Tua really quick.
Okay.
Because I do think we should go through them all individually, but with Tua, you know, he had the hip stuff in college. Now he's got and I mean, I'm not saying he's injury prone. I mean, he got crushed by Epenesa.
No, you could say that. He's become now injury prone.
I mean, do you think this affects what the Dolphins think about doing long-term?
Of course. I mean, look what the San Francisco 49ers did with Jimmy Garoppolo.
Sure.
How's that any different? The guy started for one season. The only season he started 16 games, he goes to the Super Bowl. And yet they're like, dude, you've been healthy for half the amount of games you've been here. We're sorry. We're going to get up a boatload of picks, go up to number three, and take a guy we feel like we might be able to utilize, might be more durable. Like, that's how it works. Availability is more important, all right, than ability. Bottom line, durability is more important than ability, however you want to phrase it. So
Austin Jackson or was it Jesse Davis on the right side there who got absolutely the right tackle got smoked on the two injury. That didn't help matters either.
No, but still, if Jaylen Waddle's out of his route, which he should have been at that point in time, the ball is there on him. First down, you're moving on. AJ's got to pull up, especially with the protection that quarterbacks are given now, you know, in the pocket. So that's that injury. The reality is he's not a big guy. He's thicker, but he's not the tallest, biggest guy. And, you know, he's been through a number of these. So I don't doubt at all that the Dolphins don't have in the back of their mind concerns about him moving forward and whether or not he's going to be there for 16 games. Because if he's not, you know, you either got to have one hell of a backup, which I am, by the way, I am optimistic about Jacoby Brissett in this system, depending on if he gets to start play, how much longer. I know he's your NC State guy. That's why I wanted to bring him up. I was talking with one of my buddies before the season. They're like, which backup would you bet on having the best season this year? I said, Jacoby Brissett. If you think about the track record of Brian Flores with Fitzpatrick last year and just Tua's injury history, it'd be Jacoby Brissett, especially with the weapons that they have, especially Will Fuller coming back and the way this team is gelling. So I think a week of preparation, you put him in a game plan that fits more his skill set, what he wants to do. I think he could actually play really well in that system.
And if you look at the games that the Dolphins have coming up, and Tua is still listed as questionable. I don't think we'll know his
day to day.
Probably day to day. Probably till Friday. I mean, they get at the Raiders this week, Colts at home, which is a potential Jacoby Brissett revenge game. And then at Buccaneers and at Jaguars. So three or four winnable games. Pretty huge stretch for the Dolphins, too, because these are games against AFC opponents that you feel like you are better than and that you probably need to beat in order to put yourself in the playoff race. Falcons at home after that and then at the Bills on Halloween.
Yeah, look, we think about it like that, Will, to be honest with you. You don't think about that as a player. You're so locked into – the matchups, and sometimes you end up playing teams that we on the outside are like, oh, you know, they should have no problem with this team. But you're looking at it saying it's a bad matchup for us for X, Y, and Z, whether it's a matchup up front, you know, matchup with the secondary, whatever the case may be. or scheme wise, maybe it plays to something that, you know, you have a hard time figuring out. That's always just a week to week thing. So as much as we look at that schedule, we say, oh, this is their opportunity here. So much can change week to week, and players aren't looking at it that way.
Okay. That's why we have former professional football players on here. Because I mean, from the outside, you're definitely looking at the bigger, you know, the bigger picture, but I guess you're right. It's so granular that you're prepping for the coming week. Carson Wentz, who you mentioned, not one. Oh, he got a BOGO deal on sprained ankles. That's right. SOGO, sprained one, get one free, maybe.
Yeah,
BOGO down there.
This only happens in a
fancy portion of Fort Lauderdale you live in. I make you
right, but this only happens to white guys, right? Like this doesn't happen to like anyone else out there. Just it's like, yeah, only they would sprain both ankles somehow, you know. I'll say this before he even sprained both ankles. I'm just saying it's like we're unathletic somehow. You usually sprain one. Look, now
I sprained my ankle at a fish show. I'm with you.
The thing with Carson Wentz is, but even before that, he was not moving well, and I said this early on radio, it reminded me of after my Liz Frank, after having back surgery and then having complications with nerves and down my right leg and all that, watching myself on film move and be like, good God, I don't move the way I once did. He doesn't move the way he once did. He doesn't seem to have that explosion or the same type of ability to get out the pocket and like actually hurt you with his legs. Like, do you remember when he first started playing? He's a good athlete. Like, he used to take off, run. That was
he'd run you over.
What he would do. Yeah. Yeah. And that's just not there anymore, man. Like, he has a hard time cutting. It's like turning a boat. He has a hard time really building up any speed. Mm. And there's times when you see him stress and take chances on plays where you're going, what are you doing? You know, and I think he feels the pressure to have to do something or make something happen because he knows like he really can at this point. But that's it. I mean, this was a huge year for him in general. I don't know how long this would potentially keep him out. I think they're a worse team, obviously, without him, whether it's, you know, Jacob Eason or anyone else. But the truth is, I'm not really so sure where this team is going anyway. I mean, I'll be real. Even with him back healthy, I'm not sure where this team's going.
So we talked about Dak Prescott and potentially overcompensating and causing, you're not stepping into your throws. You work with your, you know, it strains your shoulder because you're throwing with more of your arm. I was wondering, do you think there's a chance that the Colts and or Carson Wentz, you know, combined rushed back from that foot surgery and this is sort of leading to that? The sprained ankles don't really fit. And he got rolled up on by Aaron Donald. So I don't know. I'm just wondering if, I mean, that's a lot of, it's like a, like we talk about cluster injuries at certain positions for NFL teams. Carson Wentz is having a cluster injury on his lower body. I mean, it's insane.
Well, think about it this way. When is a professional athlete not rushed to come back from injury?
Almost always.
Like, it's always. Like, whatever the timetable is, that's for a professional athlete, right? That's not for, like, a normal human being or what I think most orthopedics would say is, like, overly safe. It's the reason why you see a lot of guys who have an ACL tear, they're usually better 2 years out than the year after. Now, yes. I guess Adrian Peterson's the exception,
Philip Rivers.
Right, because he really demonstrated the running ability with that ACL. That's right.
I'm just saying he came back. He didn't miss a single snap.
Well, we're not talking about missing time. I'm just saying the way their performance is.
Yeah, you're talking about
like outside of Adrian Peterson, you're hard pressed to find a player who's going to run better off an ACL, you know, following year. It's usually 2 years after they start to feel more comfortable again. And I just think it's a part of mental thing, like being able to be like, all right, I can push off. I can just be as explosive, and I'm not going to tear this. I'm not going to have some issue or injury. I mean, part of it too is building back up that strength and stability and the ability for your body to handle the intensity of a game. But a lot of that's too is mental. And look, maybe what you're pointing to as far as with the foot and all that, maybe that's why he looked like he was moving. I don't want to say more gingerly, but just not as explosive. I mean, look, I had a foot injury. One of the things that it hurts to do when you come back and start rehabbing is, when you really want to run and sprint or jump or whatever the case is or cut, you got to load up that left foot in my case and then be able to push off of it. Well, it's hard to do and it's painful every time you do it, right? Yeah. Your body doesn't want to let you do that. So I do wonder if that played a factor into it. I mean, either way, having two ankle sprains is not going to get any better with this.
I just question, you know, they haven't even ruled him out for this week yet. And I just question the idea that you would allow this, you would trade this. But it's not going to, it looks like it might not be a first round pick now. It might be a second round pick now if he doesn't play enough, if he doesn't play enough snaps. But
right, right.
You know, you trade this high pick for him. And by the way, I mean, right now, if the season were to, I mean, the season were to end today after 2 weeks, but the currently the Colts would be giving up the fifth overall pick to the Eagles, which would be very, wow, very bad. If and Carson Wentz would have to play the full portion of the snaps. At any rate, what I'm saying is he has the foot injury. You get the surgery done. You rush him back for week one. He suffers multiple ankle sprains. I mean, maybe just hit the pause button, see what happens over the next couple of games, and then you make a decision on whether or not you're going to bring him back right away. I mean, I understand it's a weird spot because you don't want to – you feel like you had a contending team. I mean, does Frank Reich – is Frank Reich
do they, though? Like, no, do they feel so. Like they have a contending team?
I think they feel like it. I don't feel like
sure. I don't either. At least that's for what we've seen the first 2 weeks. And I know, like, week one can be an imposter. And trust me, I was as guilty of anyone – as far as buying into week one with some of my picks with Pete. So I'm sure when I go into studio, you know, he's going to hammer me for this, but I think my concern is more like, is it potential to damage anything else worse or structurally, or is it just pain management? But even if it's pain management, I mean, do you want him to be in there if he's not 100% healthy? And I think on to that point, is Carson Wentz's floor, like, let's say he's playing banged up. Let's say he's not playing at 100%. Is that better than a Jacob Eason 100%? Like, I don't know, because I haven't seen enough of Jacob Eason. But I think that's if you're a coaching staff, and that's maybe what they're contemplating right now, is do we really want to push him back if what his floor is at this point with all the injuries isn't really going to help us win? You know, if we could put a healthy Jacob Eason in, see what we've got in him, that's why he's the backup, see what he's capable of, and then go from there for a week or two and see if he can't provide a spark or do better with what Carson's done in 2 weeks.
Yeah, and the other problem is if you play Wentz now and it gets worse, and he I don't know how you aggravate two sprained ankles. I mean, maybe he takes a huge hit and suffers. You know, he can't run or he can't move around in the pocket, so he's very well, and so his throwing. You know, he gets a wide receiver hurt because he can't throw accurately, or he takes a huge shot to the side because he can't move. I mean, whatever it is, there are ways this can get you know, can exacerbate the problem here, and if that happens, you're really hurtling towards a situation where you end up with a completely lost season. And
So
I don't know how the Colts handle this. I don't know what the right way to handle this is, but I think
they have to take patience into account for this reason. The Jaguars aren't going anywhere. The Texans aren't going anywhere. All right. And then Tennessee sitting there at 1-1. So it's not like the division's running away from you. So if I was in their position, I would say, let's give him a couple weeks off. Let's let him try to come back healthy. I mean, seriously, like, what do you think the Texans and Jaguars are going to be at this point? Like, Tennessee is the team you're ultimately competing with. They're going to have – they already have a more difficult schedule than you to a degree. So why not let, you know, things play out the next couple weeks and then go on from there and get him – try to get him as close to 100% as possible to then try to make a run for the division. Because that's the only way I think they get in the playoffs. AFC South is not getting a wild card team.
No. And – Here's how I would look at it. And again, I know I understand that, as you pointed out when we're talking about Tua, that NFL teams don't look at it like this. But you're at the Colts have at Tennessee, at Miami, at Baltimore. That is a brutal, just three road games is not easy. And then they have Houston at home before at San Francisco. I would look at this as, okay, let's play Jacob Eason for the next four games. Let's give Carson Wentz time to get healthy, time to get right. If we steal a game against Tennessee this week, it is absolute gravy. We're probably getting Miami. We'll get Miami with the potential backup. At Baltimore is not a game we expect to win anyway. And then we get the Texans at home, which you expect to win regardless of who your quarterback is, right?
Well, you'd hope to. I mean, again, this is us talking. Like, you expect to win every game.
And I realize that they don't go, well, we can't win in Baltimore. Let's give it up there.
I think what you're prioritizing is the divisional games. That's what you're prioritizing.
Sure.
So if Wentz can go this week, you're going to do everything you can to try to give it a go. And then after this week, then you take a step back and you reevaluate and you say, okay, let's maybe give him a couple weeks off, or wasn't going to work. You know, so I would say you're definitely going to see him try to go this week. And if he can't, it's Eason. Probably, I'd say, then maybe for the next three. And not because you say, well, we don't feel like we're going to beat Baltimore, whatever the case is, or Miami for that matter.
Yeah, I realize teams don't say that.
Right, but I'm saying, so that's how I think they're going to try to manage it. He'll try to go this week if he can, understanding the importance of this divisional game. And then if he can't, maybe you take a couple more weeks off, and then you get him back for Houston to ensure that you get that win.
Okay. And we so Breach and I pointed out on Sunday night that the Titans are -5 against the Colts. If for some reason Carson Wentz were to play, that line probably moves
-3. -4.
Yeah, -2 or -3. I think it's off the I see -5, -120. Yeah. So if you think Carson Wentz is gonna play, you would want to take the Colts now, and you could probably get a buy, you could probably get a window with the Titans, you know, on the other side. But anyway. I digress. Yeah, where you just, you know what I mean? Where you try to hit.
I'm saying, I think regardless, Titans are going to be favored. It's just by.
Yeah, but I'm how saying many. You could, but it might be -2.
Yeah, no, you're going to get advantage. Yeah, I get it. I get what you're saying.
Yeah. Okay. Moving along from Carson Wentz to Tyrod Taylor, the Houston Texans. Tyrod Taylor is not going to play on Thursday night, which means we
Deshaun have Watson. Oh, no. Davis Mills. Sorry. Thought Deshaun Watson for a second.
No, in fact, almost 6% of the Texans' active roster spots will be used on quarterbacks who cannot or will not play on Thursday night, and they already have one of the worst rosters in football. But sure, keep going. They will likely call up Jeff Driskel from the practice squad, so that way they don't. I mean, they have to have another quarterback, right? It can't just be Davis Mills, right?
Yeah, I'm trying to think who is on the roster that may have some emergency quarterback scenario. But yeah, they'll bring up Driskel right
before. Maybe Danny Amendola, but he's hurt too. So, you know.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, no, it'd be Driskel. And then I'm trying to think who else they have. I'm trying to think who their wide receivers are. They're going to go Wildcat. They like to run the football anyway. So,
Philip Lindsay, Mark Ingram, Rex Burkhead, David Johnson.
Yeah, I mean, they literally would just go Wildcat the rest of the game.
I think so.
They would put back the NFL passing game for, you know, decades.
Well, they're already currently doing that. Tyrod Taylor's actually looked pretty good. You feel bad for him because he just can't stop getting hurt wherever he goes.
Were they winning when he went out of the game last week? I was trying to remember. I knew he had the scramble for the touchdown. I couldn't remember exactly when it happened.
Let me look.
I feel like it was either close or they might have been winning. But either way, like, it goes to show you too how well he's been playing. Like, he legitimately kept their team in that game.
Yeah, they were. When he ran in for the touchdown, they were up 14-7.
Yeah, I mean, I just, you know, he's had, actually, we'll just go on this tangent. He has had the worst luck of any NFL player that I can remember in the past 2 decades. I mean, literally, like, you get drafted to the Baltimore Ravens, who end up going and winning a Super Bowl with the quarterback that's there, which isn't a bad thing because you get a ring as a backup, but still, like, you don't get that opportunity to shine, which I think he would have done some special things there. Because when he first got in the league too, he wouldn't have been Lamar, but he was able to tote the rock a little bit and take off and do some things,
relative,
right?
To like the quarterbacks who were in the league at the time, he would have been, yeah, kind of Lamar-ish. Yeah.
100%. And then he goes to what, Buffalo? They go to the playoffs. That's not good enough for them at that point. Yep. So they ship him out to what, Cleveland after that? And then, well, of course,
Rex got fired. Anthony Lynn used him down the stretch. And then he goes to Cleveland. He suffers a concussion.
But still, even before he plays, they draft the number one overall pick and a quarterback. So, you know, the writing's already on the wall. Then he gets the concussion. Baker goes in, plays well, rest is history there. He goes to the LA Chargers. Again, they draft the quarterback. He gets stabbed by a doctor who's trying to shoot up his ribs. Justin Herbert goes in. He plays amazing. Now he's moving on from there to the Houston Texans, which, you know, looked like a decent situation in the sense that he was going to get to play, but now he's got a hamstring injury and he's what, on an IR now? I mean, I don't know if I've ever seen a player have more unfortunate, I don't even know what you call it, unfortunate consequences or issues. It's just, it's amazing.
I would lob out my boy, Mike Glennon, for that as well. In the
Stop.
Sense. I'm trying to he had Russell Wilson behind him at NC State, gets drafted by Greg Schiano in Tampa Bay because Schiano loved him and recruited him to Rutgers in college. And then Schiano gets canned, so they draft Jameis Winston. He goes and signs with the Bears, and then they decide to draft Mitchell Trubisky.
Mike Glennon had never taken a team to the playoffs. Like, let's be real. Like, let's not try to play this up. They're not even in the same category. All right.
I'm just, I'm, just I'm, I'm just looking for guys who might have similar luck.
No, there's no one close to Tyrod Taylor.
No, I agree. Look, Tyrod Taylor got stabbed in the in the lung by the.
I mean, seriously, yeah. I don't know how many times I got injected in my ribs in 2012, but my God, I mean, like that's a serious puncture if you do that.
Yes.
Anyway,
I'm trying to think of other really unlucky players. I can't think of.
I probably should move on then.
Debo wanted it to be a little bit. So let's take a break. When we come back, we will we'll discuss the rookie quarterbacks.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
So, Andy Dalton also injured, which means Justin Fields is going to come in. It was a rough week two, Brady, for those rookie quarterbacks. Trevor Lawrence had a terrible outing. Zach Wilson threw a bunch of picks. Justin Fields, Trey Lance didn't play at all. Justin Fields looked pretty lost out there after Andy Dalton got hurt. And Mac Jones was actually pretty good, but didn't have big stats or anything.
Mac Jones has looked the best by far, but he's also been the one that I think we saw that in preseason. That was my expectation coming into the season. And he's, you know, running a system somewhat similar to what he was asked to do at Alabama. So it makes a lot of sense from that standpoint. You know, Trevor Lawrence wasn't as bad as maybe he made it sound to be. I mean, he didn't look anything close to Zach Wilson. Zach Wilson looked awful. I mean, absolutely awful. And it would have been one thing if he was under duress, which he was at times, but a lot of those picks came from clean pockets. And that's what bothers me is if you're – I mean, and some of those throws weren't even in the area code of anyone. And I've said this before. Look, I didn't have Zach Wilson rated that high. And it wasn't that he doesn't have a special release or he can't create and do some things. It's that when you put on the tape before this past season, when they played a really, really watered-down vanilla schedule, that was more of what you saw. Like, he wasn't going to get away with some of the throws and some of the things he was doing last year at BYU versus lesser opponents. So he's got a long way to go. That team's got a long way to go. And I think he's the one that's got, you know, the biggest, you know, mountain to climb of all those guys. Mac looks the best. Trevor, I think, you know, it flashes at times, but that's just a tough matchup last week versus that defense. And then, look, Fields was playing in a game plan that wasn't set up for him. So with a week of preparation, if he's going to be the guy, I'd feel much more confident about watching him go in there, run the football a little bit, and then Matt Nagy and those guys being able to protect him. I mean, again, we don't know who's going to start, though, because if you ask Matt Nagy a question about scheme, apparently it matters now heading into week three. I mean, to him. It didn't matter before week one, though, when he kept telling everyone Andy Dalton's the starter for scheme. But now it matters going into week three that he doesn't want to announce who this
starter is. How did he even think that question was related to scheme? Because he got done with the interview and he sent the PR guy back out and be like, just answer that question directly. Andy Dalton is the starter when healthy.
It's like, when healthy.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I don't get is he wanted to be defensive about it because I think we all know Dalton and Fields are two different players. So how defenses are going to prepare are two different things, right?
Oh, I see. Especially this early in the week. I see what, okay, I can see that. That's a good answer. I mean, that's
like,
a good...
like right now, like who do the Bears play this week?
The Bears play the they don't play the Bengals because they just played the Bengals. The Bears are 7.5-point dogs at oh goodness gracious, what's the matter with me? I mean, just how can I never?
Okay, we'll move past the Browns. There we go. So if I'm the Browns right now, right, I am implementing and I'm probably even putting a wide receiver at times at quarterback, and I'm doing different things on scout team to prepare our team for the zone reads, the quarterback runs, even how we rush. The quarterback's going to be different, right? So all those things change how you practice from, you know, Wednesday onward, depending on the practice schedule, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Whereas if you don't announce till later in the week, you're not focusing quite as much on that, right? You're not breaking down as much Ohio State tape, preseason tape of Justin Fields. So there's no doubt it matters from a schematic standpoint, but I just don't get why he was so resistant to it in week going up against week three when he wasn't, you know, before the season started going into week one.
Okay, I see what you're saying. I think what he felt like he was being asked is who's starting this week,
right?
And he said that I can't let you know that's scheme related, but it was also
he's not wrong.
I agree with that. But
the question was about the health of Andy Dalton. That's what it was about, and then he took it as that plays in the scheme, and it does. It plays in the betting, it plays in everything. That's why we have these injury reports. So
it is what it is.
Okay,
all right, that makes more sense. Good answer. I like that. Let's talk about some 0-2 teams and 2-0 teams. What 0-2 team, and here's the list of them. Falcons, by the way, it is the top of the draft looks exactly like it did last during the draft. And these 0-2 teams do not inspire a whole lot of hope. Falcons, Vikings, Lions, Colts, Jags, and Jets. Which 0-2 team could you see making a playoff run? I feel like there's only one real answer on here.
It's Minnesota to me, right? I mean, am I crazy? I thought they looked really good. In fact, they really should have beaten Arizona. They shouldn't be an 0-2 team. Cousins played great. Dalvin Cook and the way they can run the football. The defense is still coming together. But, you know, the reality is it's not like anyone's running away at the NFC North right now. So I would say the Vikings are the team that if the NFC West wasn't so damn good, you might say has a shot at a wild card spot. But I think they're going to have to win the division. And you know, Aaron Rodgers is kind of back after what we saw him do. Yeah. So it's unlikely, but I think the Vikings are the only team you could really pick there. Maybe the Colts, because the AFC South is so bad.
The Colts could possibly. I mean, I suppose you could throw in the Jags just because the AFC South is so bad. Like, you know, right. I mean, if the Titans kind of cratered and we don't think the Texans are going to win games and Colts lose Carson Wentz, maybe the Jags make a move. I don't think that's the case. Falcons look dead in the water. Jets look terrible.
The Falcons look awful. I mean, awful. And it's shocking only because, I mean, they've got some players, but
they've invested
goodness,
a lot
I mean,
in their offensive line. It's not good.
No, it's not. It's really that's one of the teams that's fooled me so far. I keep believing in what Matt Ryan's done. I mean, they showed up a stat the other night on, you know, what was it, Monday Night Football? And Aaron Rodgers, what, just cracked the top 10. He just surpassed in career passing yards. And who's sitting there at number 9? Matt Ryan, who Aaron Rodgers isn't going to ever catch because I think Matt Ryan has like 5,000 more yards passing. And I'm like, hold on a second. Really? Like, he's got that many more career passing yards and he's a few years younger.
Yeah.
So there's no way Rodgers is going to be able to catch him, let alone, you know, be able to crack that. So it was just interesting to look at that number and go, wow. You know, Matt Ryan's had a really successful career in regards to what he's done, at least statistically. But I mean, they're struggling big time right now. And I don't know if you want to put it on him, but their defense is bad too.
If he wins that Super Bowl against the Pats, he's probably in the Hall of Fame pretty easily.
Hall of Fame. Yeah.
And he's got, I mean, he's still going to be borderline. It'll be close, but it may not, it may need rejuvenation somewhere other than Atlanta to
I mean, he's got an MVP. But how many times do you need to be an all-pro? How many times do you – I mean, that's what it comes down to.
Yeah.
Because I think when you look at the NFC picture, as far as the quarterbacks he's played along with, there's been some good quarterbacks that are also going to be Hall of Famers. But that's what I think stands in his way is, like, he needed that Super Bowl more than anything else to have on his resume.
Correct. That Super Bowl puts him into the Hall of Fame, I feel like. And now nobody says, oh, well, he went to a Super Bowl. You know, nobody gives him credit for almost winning a Super Bowl. What about 2-0 teams that might be not quite as good as their record indicates? The Raiders, Broncos, Bucks, Panthers, 49ers, Rams, and Cardinals are on the list. I feel like there are two pretty obvious candidates outside of the NFC West. But I guess three obvious candidates, potentially.
Okay. The Panthers are the first one.
Of course.
I'm all for the redemption that Sam Darnold got versus the Jets, how he's looked so far. CMC is back. Robbie Anderson looks great. Joe Brady really does look like an offensive genius, especially since the fallout at LSU since he left.
Okay.
And then Matt Rule's a good defensive mind, good defensive coach. There's a lot of good young players there. I mean, I'm all for them being that surprise team in the NFC South. I just don't think they're going to end up being a playoff team.
No, I think I think they'll be in the hunt, though.
Right, right. And so just for the stats, right? So from 1990 to 2019, back when we only had 12 teams that went, teams that went 2-0 had a 62% chance during that period of time of going to the playoffs. Teams that went 0-2 had a 12% chance. Now, last year, okay, 17 teams each side, 14 total teams, there was not a team that went 0-2 that made it to the playoffs.
Correct.
If that gives you any indication of the hole they're in. But just to kind of further the conversation statistically. But it's got to be the Panthers. And then I think the other team, though, is the Cardinals because, they really shouldn't have won that game. And I love what they're doing so far. Kyler Murray might be in the MVP conversation, but I think the 49ers are better. I think the Seahawks are better, even with that disappointing, you know, loss and what they gave up to the Titans. And I think the Rams are better.
Yeah.
So I still think right now they're the worst team in that division. And so, yeah, it's great for a 2-0 start, but let's be real, you probably should be 1-1. That's the one I'm really focusing on to see how they carry on.
Okay, so on the Panthers really quickly, I'm not like homeristic here for the Panthers at all. I think it's cool that they're 2-0. I do think they'll probably fall back a little bit. I also think that I was expecting a year three leap, maybe, especially for that defense, and maybe it's happening a little earlier.
That's Matt Rule's track record, right? Year three is always his best year.
Yeah, he goes from bad year to medium year to breakout season. And so
taking off. Yeah.
So I think they'll probably finish closer to 500 when it's all said and done. But man, their schedule. So they're at Houston this week on Thursday Night Football. So you get the mini bye before you go to the Cowboys in week four. And then you have the Eagles at home, Vikings at home, at the Giants, at the Falcons. Like that is how many of those six games do they can easily go 4-2 and be 6-2 all before you know it.
Yeah.
Now, they haven't played the Buccaneers at all, you know, in that stretch, but they play the Buccaneers two of the final 3 weeks of the season, which is actually huge because there's a chance that Tom Brady and the Bucs might have sewn up the number one overall seed and they sit guys.
Yeah. That's a reality. That's the potential chance of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you can make a case for them because they're scheduled, but the back half of that schedule gets a little bit more difficult.
For sure.
And that's where I think they start.
Pats, Bills,
that's where it starts Cardinals. Evening out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they have to stack wins now and hope they can pull off some upsets later to make the playoffs.
Let me make a case, though, because I know you said surprising, because I'm sure you're going to talk about Denver and Las Vegas. Okay.
I
think Denver's legit. I think Denver's legit.
I do too.
I think they've got the defense. I like the way Teddy spread the football around. They have playmakers. Even though I feel like their offensive line at times struggles to protect, they can still run the football. Like, that team's hanging around now. Like, I think everyone's really high, and I know you were high on the Chargers. I'm not so much, man. Like, I think they're good, and if three teams went to the playoffs from one division, it's either the NFC West, AFC West, and they're probably a part of that. But I think the Denver, especially when you look at their schedule, they set up to be a team that can be a shockingly, like, 10-win team. Maybe even better than that, at least at the pace they're on. So I'll defend them. The Raiders, it's hard to explain. It's really more about Derek Carr. He's playing like an MVP right now. That's the only thing you could say about him. Because their defense, Gus Bradley's improved their defense. I get that. I'm just not buying into their inability to run the football and Carr being able to do this for 15 more games. Like, I'm sorry. It's going to be hard for him to do that. So if they don't improve drastically running the football and a little bit on defense, I don't know. I think it's hard to sustain.
Okay. I'm sort of in the same boat. The Broncos defense is just good, barring, you know, Von Miller's back. Patrick Surtain looks like he's potentially a steal where they got him, especially after J.C. Horn. And you know, they just have guys that, you know, can fly all over the place. And offensively, the fact we overlooked the fact that Teddy Bridgewater is extremely familiar with Pat Shurmur's system. And that makes life a lot easier for him to be this, you know, I mean, he's just better than Drew Lock, and they made the right decision. Like, it's very clear 2 weeks in.
Yeah, look, I think you and I were talking about this before. His ceiling might not be as high as Drew Lock, but his floor is sure of a hell of a lot higher than Drew Lock's. And that's what it gives them. It gives them this, like, consistent level of play where he's not turning over the football. He's putting the football at the right spot. And that's all they needed last year, maybe even the year before. I mean, think about how many close games they lost. That one pass here, one lack of a turnover here might have changed the outcome of the game. They don't have to worry about it anymore with Teddy. So, and by the way, I know everyone's kind of seen that clip of Von Miller telling him, hey, we haven't felt this way since 18 was here. But that's big. Like, when you've got a leader on defense who comes up and says that to a guy, and he's honestly telling him, like, we have confidence and faith in you, that's way bigger than I think you can ever kind of measure and put in some sort of metric.
For sure. Speaking of metrics, just want to let you know. Would you like to know what the dork stats say about the top five teams in the NFL?
Sure. Let's hear it.
This Football Outsiders DVOA. I know you're a big
team. Oh, yeah. Here it is. Let's hear it.
Shoot the DVOA in my roid-filled arm. Yeah, shoot it. Number one, the Carolina Panthers. They have the number one ranked defense, 15th ranked offense. Number two, and the only team with an offensive and defensive ranking in the top five, the Los Angeles Rams. Number three, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And this is, they haven't adjusted for opponent yet. That happens about week 4 or 5, I think. Number four.
Yeah.
As you well know. Number four, yeah, of course. The only other team with an offensive defense in the top 10, the Denver Broncos are the number four offense and the number 10 defense, and the fifth team in football, the Arizona Cardinals. Las Vegas, by the way, 19th.
That's a bit odd.
That's a red flag. That's expected progression.
If you're a nerd and you read into that stuff, yeah, of course. But
okay,
yeah.
This is adjusted for situation. It's not.
Well, okay. Let me ask you this. So Carolina's one or no? What, number one? What does that mean to you? Are you betting on them to win a Super Bowl right now? Like, are you looking at them saying, well, right now they're the best team in the NFL? Do you really believe that?
No, of course not.
Okay.
The reason that they're higher is that their offense is average and their defense is best in football. But again, it hasn't adjusted for opponents yet
because they haven't played enough games. I understand how the math works.
No. I'm just saying. Once they adjust for opponent and then factor the Jets in, they're going to drop to like the fifth best defense. Yeah. I just think the defense looks, I don't think the Panthers are the best team in football. Of course not.
I don't think they're even anywhere close to the best team in their division. Tampa Bay looks by far and away the best team in that division.
Oh, really quickly, because we won't talk to you until, no, that's next week. We can talk about it. But I got asked about it this morning on Tuesday morning on Boston radio. They're like, we know this is 2 weeks away, but it's like clearly setting up for Tom Brady to come in here and to put a blowtorch straight into Bill Belichick's face and squeeze the like trigger as hard as he can. Right. That's what's happening. I was like, yeah, it sure feels that way.
He's just going to crop dust the entire New England Patriots sidelines with his touchdown passes. Yeah. Just crop dust the entire thing. Hey, hey, Bill, how does that smell? You know, smell?
Gonna break.
It's defeat.
So he needs, he is 499 yards short of tying.
This is the dumbest stat. Yeah. Drew Brees' career passing. You know, what's funny about this? He's got more passing yards already, dude. Like, I get it. It's not during the regular season. If you include his playoff numbers, but he's got more like that. It's the dumbest thing that we make a big deal about. I don't get it.
I don't think we make a big deal out of it. All I'm saying is that I would
get. He's going to do it in that game. I get it.
I will guarantee you that Tom Brady does not have more than 498 passing yards this coming week. And then if he has 498, the Bucs will hand the ball off the rest of the game. And then he'll go in there. And the first pass is like a bomb to Gronk for a touchdown. I mean, they're going to rub it. The other thing is they're doing like the Tommy and Gronky show. We're having the time of our lives. It looks like you get divorced and you go on Facebook and you see your ex-wife and she's posting pictures of like riding around in a Ferrari with a new boyfriend. Like that feels like what Tom and Gronk are doing.
Yeah, sure. Maybe a little bit. I wonder because Tom's been so successful for so long. And obviously, they've probably been breaking up, or they were breaking up for a period of time, or maybe he was starting to get frustrated with it. I wonder if she would have left sooner. And I wonder, I mean, obviously this situation in Tampa wouldn't have been what it is now, right, with Bruce Arians. So I don't know. I just the way it's played out, now he's talking about maybe playing to his 50. It's like you look at it and you go, huh, like how different would his career would have been had he gone somewhere else? Now looking back and watching, you know, Super Bowl in year one and then 2-0 so far to start, and you look at it and go, well, maybe he could have done that in a lot of other places too. It's interesting to like think about. Like he could have left. Like he's literally had three Hall of Fame careers. And yeah. So at any point in time, he could have just picked up and said, I'd rather go have fun somewhere else. But everything happens for a reason, I guess.
I would guess that he wonders if he should have left at least a year or two earlier. Also, I think Bill Belichick kind of chased him off too. Let's not sleep on that.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, it's, although I mean, they went to a lot of Super Bowls on the back end of his career.
With his career. Yeah.
So
yeah. And that's the other reason. It's like, do you want to risk not adding to your legacy and, I mean, coasting through the AFC East? Like, that's the one thing I think he never took for granted was they had it easy winning the AFC East.
Yeah.
So
they were almost, guaranteed just win two games in the playoffs and you're in the championship game.
Exactly. But even then, like, they knew almost every single year they're hosting a playoff game.
Correct.
Like, they knew that every single year, which is how strong is that? How powerful is that? You win a few more games. Now you've got a bye. And then after that, next thing you know, you're the number one seed and you're hosting it all the way through.
It's not dissimilar to Alabama, where you are so dominant that you get everybody else at all the other schools constantly fired, and so you never have to deal with like anybody. Just beat Georgia once, and you don't have to beat Georgia. Just you're just gonna get to the it's the same thing there. Like the Jets, the Bills, and the Dolphins were constantly firing people and changing quarterbacks to play catch up.
Right, and part of that's just from the organizational instability, but that's a whole other story.
But the organizational instability is created in part because you're in the same division with the Patriots.
Yeah, it's some of that. I just think that the ownership's different and the way they go about handling it's different, right? Because you could make that same case. So what are you blaming the Steelers and the Ravens for how the Browns have continued to have turnover, right? Because the Bengals have had success and they haven't. And they've actually been really patient too. So I think it's just more about the individual owner and how they operate the team.
That's probably fair. That's a lucky break for the Patriots, but yes. Okay. That'll do it for this week's Brady Quinn football show. I think, right. Did we miss anything? Yeah.
No, I think we're good. I hope you feel better. Hope you get some rest that voice.
I'm feeling great already. This is the shot of energy that I needed in my week.
Oh, is it?
Slingshot me into a nap on Tuesday afternoon before.
Remember we tried to talk about shotgunning Bud Lights and you're like, they wouldn't like that. We can't talk about that. You have to drink responsibly.
Drink responsibly.
That's right. Do not shotgun one. I mean, even if it's the only one you have, do not do it.
Thank you, Brady. It's always
drink responsibly.
I'm Mark Chapman. Welcome to the Planet Premier League podcast. Each week, Cesc Fabregas, Nader Manua, and myself talk all things Premier League.
As a player, you don't have time to talk.
No.
You don't have time to make a plan. You just need to deal with wave after wave after wave.
We watched Coach Carter, and he said, afterwards, the game's just about doing this for your teammates. And I remember looking around halfway through the film, and half the squad was asleep.
Planet Premier League. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.